Well, good afternoon, everyone. I've called the session to clarify some aspects of the media coverage in relationship to the process used that ultimately led to Ian Fletcher's director of GCSB appointment. And I'm happy to take your questions on that. But before then, I thought there were three key issues that I'd like to explain. The first is, in this kind of appointment, what is the appropriate role for a minister? And I think it's important to realise that this role and roles like it, and that includes the Chief of Defence Force, the Police Commissioner, Director of the New Zealand Intelligence Service, the Solicitor General, these are all positions that are not my employees. These are all positions where they are statutory officers who are appointed by a minister and who serve at the pleasure of the minister. And I think that is a very important distinction to communicate. So for in the case of public service chief executives, an example of that would be the Secretary to the Treasury, the process is much more arm's length from ministers than it is in the case of a role like the Director of GCSB. For example, in the case of a role like the Secretary to the Treasury, I would not consult ministers around, for example, shortlist. I come to my own judgments about that. I'd run the process. And ultimately, ministers, their only role is a veto right about the recommendation that I put forward. But because the nature of the relationship between ministers and these officers is different, so is the process that is used. The Commission does run a professional process to ensure that people in those roles are people of merit and standing. However, ministers are engaged in that process, and appropriately so, given ultimately it is the minister's recommendation to Cabinet for appointment. How ministers choose to involve themselves in the process varies. In terms of my time as commissioner, some ministers have chosen to be very arm's length from that process. Some ministers have chosen to be much more hands-on in the process. For example, certainly one minister has wanted in my time and has done so, interviewed the shortlist of candidates themselves as well as the panel. Now, both of those strategies, in my view, are entirely appropriate. So in the case of GCSB, the interactions that I had with the responsible minister, who in this case was the Prime Minister, was not atypical of the kinds of engagement that I would have with ministers around similar roles. Second point I'd like to pick up is in relationship to the fact that I recommended to the Prime Minister someone who did not have either a military or intelligence background for the role of Director of GCSB. I do not consider that background is essential to carry out the functions of Director of GCSB. And indeed, at the time we were selecting Sir Gerry Matapurai's successor in 2011, we were beginning to get some insight into significant management issues that needed to be addressed within GCSB. We certainly did not have prescience around the issues that have emerged in the Kim.com case or indeed in Rebecca Kitteridge's report that will be released shortly, as the Prime Minister has indicated. But it was becoming clear that there was a need to work on the capability of the organisation. There was a need to change internal structures. There was a need to develop new aspects of the role of GCSB, particularly a focus on cyber security and working across the public sector and not just the traditional military and intelligence community. And those critical areas of success for the director were laid out in the position description, which was made public prior to the start of the recruitment process. The third point I'd might like to make is in relationship to the comments made by Sir Bruce Ferguson on Campbell Live last night. I'm disappointed in those comments because certainly Sir Bruce has misunderstood the process and certainly hasn't sought to inform himself with myself around what actually happened. In essence, Sir Bruce last night was claiming that certain individuals had been shortlisted and at very late notice were dispatched from the process in favour of another candidate, namely Mr. Fletcher. This is not true. As I have explained before on a number of occasions, the recruitment consultant prepared a potential shortlist that was discussed with me, and then as I do with all these roles, I take the potential shortlist to the responsible minister, in this case the Prime Minister, to either confirm the shortlist, to either select individuals from that potential list, to add names to that shortlist, or indeed not to proceed with that shortlist. All the individuals who were on the potential shortlist knew that they were on a potential shortlist. They also knew that the final decision about whether they were actually shortlisted and would therefore go to interview was in the hands of the Prime Minister. Because there was the possibility that the Prime Minister would accept some or all of those names, the individuals were told that if they were successful to get onto the shortlist, to clear, to make themselves available on a particular day for interview. So it was no surprise that people on the potential shortlist knew when the interviews were, because that was the nature of the process. That, however, was very different from an understanding that those people were actually shortlisted. Prior to the interview date, those individuals were told that the Prime Minister had considered their applications and their interest was declined at that point, and the Prime Minister was asking me to consider other individuals for the role of Director of GCSB.
Questions? So it was the Prime Minister, then, not you, that decided to scrap that shortlist?
Ultimately, I provided my advice. As I said, I've been very open. In my judgment, while a number of individuals on that potential shortlist were very solid individuals, in my view, the change context that GCSB was facing at that time, and I think subsequent events have proved that it is currently facing, meant that those individuals were not best placed to lead the organisation in the future. Ultimately, it was the call for the Prime Minister whether he chose to accept my advice. So, and in this case, he did.
So are you suggesting that perhaps having a military or intelligence background could hinder a person in that role?
I think I wasn't focusing on, because I'll make no comment about the actual backgrounds of the people on the potential
shortlist.
I looked at their skills in the round, including where they had worked before, and came to the judgment that in terms of the context of GCSB going forward, they weren't the appropriate skills. When ultimately Mr. Fletcher agreed to enter the process, I certainly was aware from his CV that he had undertaken a significant change management at an organisation level in both his role in the United Kingdom and in the role that he was currently holding in Queensland, where he had overseen significant change processes, and that certainly was, in my view, a factor that led to me recommending that he should be considered by the interview panel.
Jonathan Boston says it was a mistake for the Prime Minister to ring Ian Fletcher and the other person, and that you should have done that, that it should have been within your sphere of the process. Do you think there's a point in that? That's raised the perceptions around the process?
I think clearly, given where we are at, it has created perceptions around the process that I don't think are unfair. Equally, on the other hand, this has been advice that the Commission has given for a number of years. It is not wrong or unethical for ministers to suggest to individuals that they enter a recruitment process. That is the nature of the Prime Minister's intervention. The suggestion that somehow myself, Martin Weavers, John McKinnon, Helene Quilter are somehow going to be swayed by the Prime Minister making a phone call to someone to enter a process, I think is bizarre. In the sense of anyone who is the State Services Commissioner or a senior public servant, they have to be able to work effectively in a world where ministers are giving advice, contributions, and for those senior public servants still to come to a professional and objective view. And that is what has happened in this case. I chose very deliberately the panel to consider any application in this case because I believe that they are all people of high integrity. They are also people who I think had relevant skills and experiences to assist me in coming to a view about whether a candidate was suitable for appointment.
So can I just clarify, you decided that the people on the shortlist weren't necessarily up to scrap, but ultimately the Prime Minister's decision to scrap the shortlist.
Ultimately, I don't resile from my advice. I've been very clear what my advice was. Well, my advice to the Prime Minister is, as I've said previously, because of the context in which GCSB was entering, while some of the people on the potential shortlist had solid backgrounds, they were not the people I believe could take the organisation forward best.
So why did you take the shortlist to them then if you didn't think they were any good?
Well, in the sense of as I say, in the context of this exercise, we had been running a process where the recruitment consultant had, we'd had formal applications, they had done a degree of search. For me, it was important, and I go back to the initial comment, because this was a ministerial appointment, to keep a high degree of transparency in front of the Prime Minister about what the process was throwing up. In this case, I took to him the best candidates that had come from that process, and the Prime Minister had a real choice about whether he took those people forward. I gave him my professional advice that I thought in the first instance we should see whether we could identify other candidates that I would consider better suited to take forward GCSB in the current context, he accepted that advice, but ultimately that was his decision.
But whatever you were running the process, why didn't you, though, then take on ringing all of the potential names that you and the Prime Minister talked about?
Well, there was, in terms of my understanding of our meeting was there was going to be further reflections that each of us was going to undertake about, as the Prime Minister said, we did identify some names in that session. Mr. Fletcher's name was certainly one of the names identified, and it wasn't a surprise to me that his name came up in that context, because I was very well aware of his background and for a couple of years, and I certainly had half an eye around getting him into the New Zealand state sector into an appropriate role at some point, if that was possible, because he is a very able individual. My recollection of meeting with the Prime Minister was I hadn't expected him to ring Mr. Fletcher directly, but he obviously did so. So I was a little surprised when I had the call from Martin Weavers. But as I said, my expectation was we were going to work through further names, identify them. My expectation is that the Commission would have approached an individual or individuals.
So create another shortlist effectively?
We'll see whether, we were in a live situation about could we identify further potential candidates? So the option.
But you would have then made the approach, that was the point.
That's right.
So can we point, just to be clear, what point did you, was the Prime Minister make you aware of friendship that he had, a family friendship with?
Way back in 2009, I recall having a discussion with the Prime Minister about what I was trying to do with the chief executive group in my term as commissioner. I expressed a desire to the Prime Minister that I wanted to build on the existing skills of the group by bringing in people from different backgrounds. These included expatriate New Zealanders who had performed well in public sectors overseas. And I think in that context, he was positive about the general idea and said, I'm aware of Ian Fletcher. At that time, Ian Fletcher was in the United Kingdom. And he told me about the nature of his knowledge of Mr. Fletcher.
The shortlist is vetoed.
Yep.
That process doesn't go any further. The Prime Minister then rings his friend, which you say you didn't expect and you were surprised by, and you are still telling me that you're confident that this process was all handled above board.
Oh, absolutely, and I'll tell you why I tell you that, because we talked about Mr. Fletcher's name in the meeting. As I said to you, I was certainly very aware of Mr. Fletcher's pedigree, and he certainly wasn't, from my point of view, a left-field name in this context. I'm very clear, though, that I'm totally confident in the process, because the Prime Minister was very clear with me that he wanted anyone to go through the recruitment process, he wanted me to give him a recommendation around whether he should appoint an individual. And that, I've worked now with this government for 4 years on a wide range of appointments, and in that time, I have never received pressure from ministers to act in a particular way. Ministers have, and the Prime Minister in particular, has always been scrupulously professional in terms of his expectations of me about making recommendations on appointments.
But by making that phone call, the normal recruitment process was cut short once Mr. Fletcher's name entered the frame.
I don't think that is a fair comment at all, because I think what we were facing in the situation of my advice and the Prime Minister sharing that view, that we did not want ultimately to go ahead with the potential shortlist, there was the opportunity to identify other more suitable candidates or a candidate. There was a very limited time to do that, the reason being, as some of you will be aware, there is a convention that appointments to positions like this are not made within 3 months of a general election. So we were facing a situation of either a suitable candidate being considered and recommended for appointment, or no candidates being identified. And at the time Mr. Fletcher's name came up, and even at the time the Prime Minister rang him, it was not at all clear that he would enter the process. And if that had not come to fruition, we would have actually closed off the process pretty much at the end of July, and we would have had to restart the process after the 2000 election in 2012.
Why are you re-advertising the job when you thought that the shortlist wasn't up to scratch and to be able to get it? Do you think doing this job out of the paper again?
No, I think not at that stage. As I said in my media statement last night, you know, it's normal business for me to get a shortlist and then say, well, actually, am I happy with this? Do I want to add someone to it? Do I want to search for more candidates? And I wanted to go through that further exploration before we decided, no, we're going to go and re-advertise.
What did Mr. Key say to you in 2009 when you first discussed Mr. Fletcher? How did he know, did he explain to you how he knew Mr. Fletcher and why he thought, how he had knowledge of him and why he thought he was a good potential candidate for a top level job in the civil service?
He was aware of the role that Mr. Fletcher was holding at that time, and he knew that was a relatively large public sector organisation. I can't, because we're going back to 2009, I can't recall whether the Prime Minister said how he knew, but he certainly talked about how he had known Mr. Fletcher and his family when they were young, and the fact that they'd had infrequent contact since then.
And also, when were the other candidates told that they were no longer in the running? Mr. Bruce last night suggested they were told after Mr. Fletcher was appointed.
No, that is not correct. I've consulted our notes on this this morning. I asked the recruitment consultant to communicate to the potential shortlist that they were not going to be considered further on the 21st of July. Mr. Fletcher was interviewed on the 26th of July, and we then had a process of referee checking that went on after that time. And I think from memory, the final recommendation to Cabinet went up in the second half of August. And again, from recollection, the media statement announcing Mr. Fletcher's appointment came out in early September 2011.
Has the Prime Minister ever shoulder tapped anyone for other roles in the same way he is this time or put names forward to you?
I can't recall.
So
Jessica.
About perceptions before.
Yeah.
In hindsight, would you do anything different to change that perception?
I think substance. If what's happened, I certainly wouldn't change the fact that Mr. Fletcher was eligible to be in the process, because I think his professional credentials speak for themselves, and also I don't believe that the nature of his relationship with the Prime Minister and knowledge of the Prime Minister precluded him from being a candidate for a senior state sector role. So that certainly wouldn't change. As I said, the only issue with perception, that within the benefit of hindsight, would have avoided, I think, some of the perceptions that we have currently, is if I had contacted Mr. Fletcher rather than the Prime Minister.
Would that have been normal practice for you to do that?
Absolutely.
And what, were you surprised when the Prime Minister did this? Did you know he was going to?
I don't believe that I did, and that's why I said I was surprised when I got the phone call from Martin Weavers. But from my point of view, that didn't dissuade me from considering Mr. Fletcher in the process, because he was a highly credible person. He was known professionally to me, so I had a good understanding myself of his qualities. And as I said, had been interested for some time to get him into an appropriate role in the New Zealand state sector. So the substantive merits of considering his candidacy further for me were the dominant consideration. Because, as I say, I don't believe that there is certainly either a legal or moral or ethical bar on ministers contacting individuals to enter a public sector process, it didn't seem to me an issue about that I should say, we're not interested in talking to you.
Is the Prime Minister's reluctance to be entirely open about this process helps create these unfavourable perceptions about what?
Well, I think
what you're saying is a fairly above board and perfectly reasonable process.
Look, I think that's a question you should put to Prime Minister.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep. It's on our website. I was appointed for a 5-year term. It finishes on the 30th of June.
So are you currently negotiating your contract renewal, perhaps, or something
of
that nature?
I'm talking about these matters with the government.
So can I just ask quickly why you didn't make mention of the phone call or any of the subsequent matters that have since come to light in your original statement last week? And why did you put out that statement?
I had been concerned about some of the comments that Mr. Browning had made about this being a sinister appointment. And so from my point of view, I think the basic facts of the process needed to be laid out. And for my one, and I believe that is what we did in that statement. It was not
crucial facts, though, in that statement.
Well, in terms of the actual process that was undertaken, the Prime Minister phoning Mr. Fletcher was not a material consideration in describing the process.
But it was enough to surprise you, yet you excluded it from that statement.
Well, as I said, the purpose of the statement was to establish clarity around how we went about the process, issues about the recruitment process. It was not designed to be an omnibus, all-encompassing description of everything that went on in the recruitment process.
The Prime Minister's office never contacted you to ask him to
clarify something? No.
Can I just clarify, are you seeking reappointment?
Look, that's a matter between me and the government. Like any individual, I think I should be able to work through with ultimately my employer whether I want to do that or not, and obviously the conclusion of that, you know, will be public at some point.
You could see how the pilot and pilot could be interpreted as, you know, perhaps, yeah, with the putting out of the statement and the way that this has been sort of played out in the last week, you could see that how people would interpret your position in terms of employment in that matter.
Look, I don't think that's fair. As I say, look, I'm believe that I ran a professional process to recruit Mr. Fletcher. I have been very upset around some of the accusations that I think ultimately tarnish the reputation of Mr. Fletcher, who I think is a highly able New Zealander who has done incredibly well overseas and it's actually doing a really good job in difficult circumstances in GCSB, and I think he needs to be supported to actually get this organisation performing at the level that I think all New Zealanders want it to perform.
Great.
Would you make any recommendations about the need to tidy up process? Because you talk about ministers, because whenever a minister is going to ring someone, that will always raise a perception publicly, won't it, that that's a preferred candidate of the minister before they even get through the process proper?
Look, there's you know, there's always perception issues. You may recall, in fact, I think I actually did the review around in a quite different context, the engagement of Claire Curran back in 2007, where David Parker said, "What about Claire Curran?" And in that report, I said, "Look, I don't actually believe the minister did anything wrong. It certainly helped to create a perception issue." But ultimately, that is a decision that ministers need to make and make a judgment about whether making those kinds of contacts ultimately is worth the candle. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.